Now, on this Invest Talk podcast, Justin Klein listens to your questions.
Let's go to Texas and talk with Kent. He's looking at Citigroup.
Hey, Justin, I bought Citigroup last year around $42. I'm just wondering, what do you think about that? Is just keeping it as a core holding, or would this be a good time to just book the profits and drop back to one big giant bank?
And provides unbiased answers.
Citigroup historically has very up and down performance. If you're going to own a large bank, I think JP Morgan's the one to own.
InvestTalk, over 31 million downloads and counting.
Where do you think that new money is going to come into Ethereum, or do you think money is going to come out of Bitcoin?
Your participation makes it unique. 888-99-CHART.
This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, May 3rd, 2021 edition of Invest Talk. Appreciate y'all tuning in this hour. I'm going to do my best to make it informative and instructive for you, just like I do each and every day. And as always, we are also going to operate with our mission statement, which is independent thinking and shared success, meaning I'm not Cramer. I'm not here to pound buttons and whistles and just champion certain companies. Okay. I'm also here to bring you along in my success, in our success. And I'm going to do that by providing unbiased guidance, whether that's talk about the market as a whole, specific sectors, asset classes, explaining different processes, etc. These are all going to just be presented with the facts as I see them in front of me, using the data that I have, as well as my 20 years of investment experience. Now, I'm Justin Klein, and of course, we encourage you to contact us with your finance and investment questions. And when you do that, you shape the show. And in fact, you can call right now. Interact with me live during our 4 to 5 Pacific Time live stream broadcast, or you can leave a question on our anytime voice bank, which, as always, is 24/7 and the same number, 888-99-CHART. So let's get right to our first caller question now.
Hi, guys. Big fan of the show. I just wanted to get your opinion on Viacom. Ticker symbol is VIAC. Thank you.
Viacom, this one got kind of swept up in the, what was it, the Archegos? Yeah, Archegos. There we go. The Credit Suisse issue. A lot of banks kind of got swept up, lost a lot of money in it, and you had a massive, massive reversal. And this is a great example of when one particular fund, or maybe a group of big money funds, kind of go in there and they bid up shares, either through owning the underlying stock or through call options, which this fund did a little bit of both, I believe. And so when it came undone, the stock just did a full round trip, basically back to where it was in the fall of last year. And just shows you how irrational stocks can get. And this thing really went parabolic. In the bottom of the COVID crisis last year, it was at $11 and change. It went all the way up to $100 here before this kind of unwound at the end of last quarter. And now we're back at $39, which is basically about where it was when COVID hit. A little bit higher than that. So the big question is, how are their businesses doing? Are they improving to a better extent than they were pre-COVID? So 2020, they made $4.20, $4.84 in 2019. 2021, expect to make $3.99, next year $4.19. So they're not even supposed to make back next year, get back to where they were pre-COVID. And this is a company that's in the media business, but a lot of media properties that in some ways are struggling. CBS is probably their biggest asset, and that is tied towards cable. And as we know, cord cutting is continuing. But they also own things like Nickelodeon, MTV, BET, Comedy Central, VH1, CMT, and Paramount. So fairly well diversified, big library of films, including Mission Impossible, Transformers, etc. So certainly a lot of value there. The big question, is it good enough value for you to get excited about it? Nice 2.4% dividend. But once again, pre-COVID, they were struggling when it comes to revenue. December of 2018, pre-COVID, revenue down 6%, earnings down 45%. Just really struggling in this environment and kind of all over the place. So is it cheap? I would say it's fairly cheap. I wouldn't say it's expensive by most valuation metrics here. PE of 10-ish, okay? So that's pretty solid. Enterprise value to revenue is only 1.7. Enterprise value to EBIT only 9.3. So it is relatively cheap. But you really have to look forward. Remember, the market's always looking forward. And you have to make a decision. Are these assets that they own, these properties, media properties, going to be relevant 5-10 years from now? MTV's lost a lot of its shine. Is it going to re-emerge? Or is it going to continue to kind of dwindle? Things like that. So this is really a play more, less about the valuation and more on the future strength of those media properties. So that being said, don't love it. So I would probably pass on it and find better opportunities in, I wouldn't say more surefire, but just more certain industries. Now, to achieve financial freedom, you will need the right information and effective strategies. And that's why I am here to help you deal with this changing market environment. As you saw today, growth struggle. Struggle. Value drastically outperformed. Commodities were up nicely across the board, not just the precious metals, which had a very, very good day, but also uranium had a very good day. You had copper have a good day. You had oil and natural gas. Those both had good days. And what was interesting was the dollar was weak, but the 10-year treasury yields were down. And historically, we've talked about this, lower yields tend to be better for your growth side of the market. It's because of that discount rate, if those future cash flows, etc. But you had a struggle across the board. The NASDAQ was down, 67 points. Not a huge down day by any stretch of the imagination, but that's a solid 2/3 of 1%. And you had the S&P that was up 11 points, up 0.25%. And you had small caps, so let's look at the Russell, that was up 11 points also, but about 0.5%. Okay? And so it just shows you the dichotomy there where the tech side of the market, the NASDAQ, really, really struggled. And you had names like Google down 10 bucks, Amazon down 80 bucks. Apple was up about $1 slightly, but you're just seeing a lot of these names that had really good earnings, really great earnings, struggle, a lot of the tech names, okay? So that was the market today, continued rotation out of growth into value. Now we're heading into the very brief break. So Dave from Cleveland, hang on, you'll be next, and my phone lines are open now at 888-99-CHART.
We're already moving through the second quarter, and serious investors need to bring their best game. InvestTalk is here to help. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk with Dave. He's in Cleveland. He's looking at Abbott Laboratories. Do you own it, Dave, or looking to buy it?
Looking to buy it.
Okay. And why are you looking to buy it?
I was looking for like a long-term hold.
Okay.
It has a yield of 1.5%, and it's a little bit of a pullback. Just get your thoughts, and thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, no problem, Dave. Now, Abbott Laboratories is a fantastic company, so you can't really knock that. It's on the medical device side, which I really like. I like the medical device side a lot more than the pharma. I think there's less regulatory issues potentially. Now, they do develop some generic pharmaceuticals, but they have a lot of diagnostic systems and various they're more diverse, let's just say that, than a lot of the big pharmas. So that's one part. And they consistently grow their earnings. 2014, they only made $2 a share. This year, this was like $5.04. So in 7 years, they've increased their earnings 150%. That is a nice, solid, consistent grower. Last quarter, earnings up 35%. Earnings up 103%. Revenues up 35%. And like you said, nice 1.5% dividend. My issue is that it is a bit stretched here. And I think technically it's starting to weaken, okay? So I think you're going to get probably reversion to the mean. And I think this could trend back down somewhere around $100 a share. So maybe you get to 105, which is closer to our valuation, about 105, 100, somewhere in there. I think that's fair value. And so to me, it's modestly overvalued. It's at 120-ish right now. So it's about 20% overvalued. So I would be patient on it. Keep it on your watch list. You get down to that 100 level, I would be a lot more excited about it. Thanks for the call, Dave. Let's go to Sean in Minnesota. He wants to talk about debt.
Hey, Justin. How's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Good. No problem.
So I recently moved to California. I'm 35 years old. And I was looking at different ways to kind of decrease my debt. And I'm sick of this like monthly car payment. I invested back in April of last year, so I made a pretty good run in the market, first time investing, but now I have this chunk of cash in my portfolio, and I was wondering if it would make sense if I cut that portfolio in half and paid off my car payment, and then started using the monthly payment to start reinvesting back into the market. Or should I just keep kind of the stocks and everything where it's at and just let it grow over time?
Well, the first question is, what is the interest rate on your car loan?
Interest rate, I believe, is
2.3?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, typically when you're looking to pay down debt or pay off debt, you want to focus on the highest interest debt that you might have. Would you say that is the highest interest debt you have?
Yeah, I recently paid off all of my credit cards. So okay. The only thing that I really have that's like a continuous thing accruing any interest is my student loans and my car payment.
Your car payment. Okay. So you're starting off good, well there with focusing on the highest interest debt. And then the question is, would it make sense to basically guarantee yourself that interest rate by putting the money that you have in your investment account to pay down that loan? Now, that's just the mathematical part of it, right? The quantitative part of decision-making process. But it sounds like for you, this is more of a peace of mind thing, a qualitative assessment of what it would do for you and make you feel better, feel happier. Would you say that's true?
Here in California and everything's a lot more expensive, and it would be nice not to have to pay a card note every month.
I think you have your answer. If that is making you uncomfortable, if you don't feel like maybe you can get by or save enough by having to pay this car payment and you have the money to pay it off, I would do it. And you know, longer term, you'd say, okay, well, you'll earn better, more money in the market. But money is there to make your life better. And if your peace of mind is improved by doing something, that also is a factor in what you should do with your money. And just like we say, for most people, they should pay off their mortgage by the time they retire, because that's more of a peace of mind thing. You have a place to live no matter what. And so to me, this is a peace of mind issue more than anything. and I would do it if I were you. This is also a good time to maybe lower or rebalance your portfolio. I'm sure you've done well over the past year or so. You probably have some positions that have grown to oversized levels in your portfolio. And historically, when that happens, it's a good time to start trimming, rebalancing your positions. So start to maybe trim back some of the ones that are overweight and start harvesting some of those gains from there. It doesn't mean you sell the whole position, but do those type of things to raise the cash to pay off that loan. So I think you can make this twofold: pay off the loan, peace of mind, and then also making your portfolio improved by rebalancing it to a more reasonable level. Thanks for the call, Sean.
For investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. InvestTalk.
Let's go talk with Mark in Ohio. He's looking at CarMax. Do you own it, Mark, or are you looking to buy it?
Yes, I own it. I picked it up around $90 a share. Mm-hmm. And I was calling to get your guys' evaluation. I was wanting to get back into it, but I'm not 100% sure of the evaluation or where's another good buying point, or what's your guys' outlook on CarMax.
Well, technically, it remains strong, continuing to make higher highs and higher lows after the explosive move, really, to start the year. We started 2021 at about $95-ish, somewhere in that range. Now we're at $137-ish at the close today. Our value is, though, probably closer to that $100, $105 level. But technically, it's strong. It's, once again, making higher highs and higher lows. So I can't really argue with it in that sense. And we're in this time where used car prices are very strong, which means that as long as they can go and buy enough inventory that is at reasonable prices, they have high demand for their products. A lot of money going to the hands of people, and they're looking to go spend it in various ways. And so historically, this is a very strong business. Return on equity has hovered between 15 and 20% for a couple decades now, and it's a well-run business. It's probably one of the most well-run businesses, and continues to grow its footprint and its heft within the used car market. For everyone else out there, if you don't know what they do, they own 220 used car retail stores, and they actually have one new vehicle store, which is pretty interesting. But they sell a lot of vehicles, 426,000 used vehicles last year. And let's see, it has about 3.5% of the entire used car market share between 0 and 10 years old. So it doesn't sound like a lot, but remember, the used car market is pretty big. So technically, it's fine. Fundamentally, it's in kind of the sweet spot currently because of the backdrop of the economy. I think back half of the year, maybe you start to get into some trouble as the stimulus wears off. But I would be looking for technical indicators to see the weakness. So right now, if I'm holding it, it would be a hold. It wouldn't be a buy, because I worry a bit about the back half. But I would be having a stop of the 100-day moving average. Right now, that's around 119. It's going to continue to go up as it stays above that. And I would use that as your out, Mark. Thanks for the call.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's go to Texas and talk with Kent. He's looking at Citigroup.
Hey, Justin. I bought Citigroup last year around $42, and I was wondering, it's made a big move. It's still priced really well, though. The price to tangible book was 0.94 today and an earnings yield of around 10. And I'm thinking, you know, looking at it as a core, a whole J.P. Morgan Chase also, and I'm just wondering, what do you think about that, of just keeping it as a core holding, or would this be a good time to just book the profits and drop back to one big giant bank?
I would say I would cut it back, and actually I would get rid of it and keep the one JP Morgan. If you're going to own a large bank, I think JP Morgan's the one to own. Citigroup historically has very up and down performance. They their lending practices are not as rock solid as JP Morgan, but because of their size, they still have kind of the regulatory issues around them that limits their potential profitability. And all of that profit here that you're seeing here in 2021 is because of all of the reserves they had in 2020 for defaults, and that came back on. And these are just accounting for how banks operate. So if I'm going to invest in banks, I would much rather be allocated towards the smaller regional banks that have a lot more flexibility, operate on a smaller scale, but in a more profitable way. And Citigroup, once again, historically has up and down performance. So I would use this opportunity to get rid of it and reallocate, if you want to keep your same allocation in the banking sector, to a smaller player in the space. Thanks for the call, Kent. Now, my focus point today concerns the story, Verizon exits the media business. After paying over $10 billion to acquire some of its high-profile properties, Verizon will sell its media group to private equity firm Apollo Global Management for about $5 billion. Still going to retain about a 10% stake in the business. But there's been increasing evidence that Verizon's been wanting to sell some of its media properties and focus more on its core business, which is wireless networks and internet providing. And so this is a good example of what happens when large corporations who have a lot of cash flow, a lot of liquidity with their stock, they want to get bigger. And historically, when they go outside of their core business that got them there, they don't do so well. Now, they will justify it usually with, oh, we're diversifying our revenue stream, our profits, etc. And they're going to try to squeeze out some synergies. And they try to do that here, right? Where they lumped Verizon phone service with subscriptions to these media properties that they purchased. And it didn't really work so well. And they combined in 2018 these properties, AOL and Yahoo, into what was called the Oath branded companies. And that was by the CEO of AOL. And didn't really work. And so now it's going to be rebranded back to Yahoo. Pretty interesting. But just goes to show you that, oh, I guess we're going to a break. Give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
This is InvestTalk, made possible by KPP Financial, where principals and InvestTalk hosts Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are independent financial advisors. For clients, they are fiduciaries. Steve and Justin have a duty and a commitment to always place the interests of their clients ahead of the firm. This is different from the way many other organizations operate. And one way you can realize the benefit of an association with KPP Financial is to know that KPP practices parallel investing. This means that the personal investment accounts of KPP principals participate with client investments at equal prices and percentages. It's an important difference. You can learn more anytime at investtalk.com.
At KPP Financial, we offer independent thinking with shared success.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today. At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI red teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne.com, HackerOne.com.
You are listening to Invest Talk. Every Friday on the program and the podcast, Steve Peasley shares highlights from the newest edition of the KPP Premium Newsletter. Listen Fridays to Invest Talk. And now, Steve and Justin welcome your calls and questions. 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, I was discussing the fact that Verizon is selling off Yahoo and AOL to Apollo in about a $5 billion valuation, and that's about half of what they paid for it. And this is, once again, a good example of how large businesses make poor allocation decisions when it comes to acquisitions. And well, it's not going to sink Verizon by any stretch of the imagination, but that's what dividends are typically very good for. Now, Verizon always paid a dividend, and this hasn't precluded them from making a bad investment or a bad acquisition like this. But dividends typically keep management from spending too much and saying, hey, I got to hold back on my bids for other companies and other assets in order to make sure that we can continue to pay our dividend. And this, once again, isn't going to sink Verizon's ability to pay their dividend. But I guarantee it's something that they thought about. So maybe if Verizon didn't pay a dividend, maybe they would have paid $12, $15, $20 billion for these type of names and took a much bigger hit. And so another good lesson that if you step out of your comfort zone, out of your core business to make acquisitions, oftentimes it backfires. Now let's head up to Cupertino and talk with Richard. He's looking at WRK, which is WestRock Corporation. Do you own it or look at it or buy it?
I own it. It's in my retirement account, so I don't have to pay capital gains. I only got a couple hundred shares, but it doesn't look like it's making any money right now. Doesn't pay much of a dividend, and I'm trying to scratch my head as to why I want to keep holding it when I can take some money and run. And but unfortunately, my investment house has it as a buy rating, and I'm mystified.
Mm-hmm. Well, first, I wouldn't listen to your investment house. There's typically conflicts of interest there and problems. So I would advised to do your own research and make your own decision. But WestRock, it did scrap its dividend back during COVID, it looks like. And this is a company that is doing well in this environment. They make basically packaging for cartons and paperboard. It's one of the largest producers, actually the second largest producer of container board. So in an environment where people are shipping things all over the world in boxes, WestRock is doing fairly well. Now, the issue in my mind is that they don't really have a competitive moat. Do you really care where your box comes from? Probably not. Now, their free cash flow has been very strong. I like that. But it doesn't look like they're allocating the capital very well. If you look at their return on assets, it's been fluctuating between 2% and 6%, even to the negative territory over the past last 5 years a few times. So I would be looking to trim this because I don't think it's a great valuation here at 20 times earnings. But it's also technically perfectly fine. And in an environment, once again, where people continue to ship things, whether that's online or through other channels, because people are buying things left and right because of the money they have in their pocket, and that's requiring boxes. So I would hold it, but I would have an out on the 50-day moving average. Right now it's at 57.37 to close today. The 50-day is at 51.54. Once again, it continues to rise. I would use that as my out. So I would hold, but have a tight stop on it. Now, we're happy to take your live calls, but I want to make sure we continue to play the pre-recorded questions that came in overnight. So let's get back to the InvestTalk voicemail now at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin. I heard a podcast said that Ethereum is going to overtake Bitcoin, in your opinion, this year, 2021. So I think Bitcoin has triple the market cap at the moment as Ethereum. Where do you think that new money is going to come into Ethereum to triple the market cap, to overtake Bitcoin, or do you think money is going to come out of Bitcoin and go into Ethereum? I'll listen on the next podcast. Thank you.
Well, I'm just going to correct what he said. I actually said by the end of next year is what I was expecting, is that the market cap of Ethereum is going to pass Bitcoin. Now, that could happen quick. The crypto market is crazy, and you never know. I just see more potential use cases for Ethereum building as opposed to Bitcoin is fairly static. It's supposed to be the store value, etc. But I think there also is potential for government crackdown because of the energy usage, using the green narrative to shut down or limit these cryptocurrencies, but also the potential nefarious nature of illegal activity being used or happening using these particular currencies. And so there are multiple factors that I see governments potentially shutting down or limiting the ability, not necessarily shutting down because they can't do that, but limiting the ability or the legality of transacting. And I think that's going to come. I don't think that governments are going to just sit idly by. That being said, if outside of those risks, I just see more traction in Ethereum. And back then, the market cap of Ethereum was $300 billion, and Bitcoin was about $100 billion. Now it's $1,073,000,000 It's trillion. $1,073,000,000,000 on Bitcoin, and Ethereum's almost to $400 billion. So you're already starting to see a bit of that convergence there, where Ethereum's up about $100 billion since I said that, and Bitcoin's only up about $73 billion. So you're starting to see that outperformance, and that's what I'm seeing on the charts. And I just see that in this part of the market. Once again, that doesn't mean that they have to go up. You could see major declines in both of them, but one more than the other. So that's a possibility as well. So don't think this is some guarantee, but it's more of like a pairs trade. Going long Ethereum, short Bitcoin, that would be how you would express this view in the marketplace. Okay, because once again, both could go down. But hopefully that clarified that, and I appreciate the call. So let's grab another voice bank call, this time from New Jersey on 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve and Justin. This is Mark calling from New Jersey. I'm hoping to hear your thoughts on Sprouts Farmers Market as a stock pickup. I read on certain websites like Motley Fool and other places that it's a good undervalue right now, so I'd like to get your opinion. Thank you so much for all that you do. Take care.
All right. We agree. We like Sprouts as well. We've owned it for some time for clients. And technically, it's strong. It's had a little bit of pullback here over the past month near the 50-day moving average, near support, and had a very nice day-to-day up almost 4%, and 3.6% to be exact. And for everyone else out there, they operate 362 stores in 23 states offering natural and organic foods. And to us, this is not only a cyclical type of play where the economy is good, people are spending more in stores, but also secular, where people are focused more on natural and organic foods. And so last quarter, revenue's up 17%, earnings up 119%. And there were some nice, huge tailwinds to their business last year because of the shutdowns. Earned $2.27. That was up from $1.25 in 2019. This year, you know, moderate a bit, but still going to be $1.87 expectations for earnings by analysts. So roughly a 40% increase from 2019 earnings. And next year, supposed to make $2.03. So they're a growing business. They're still relatively undervalued. If you look at their multiples, enterprise value to EBITDA, only 5. Enterprise value to revenue, 0.5. So it's still very, very cheap. And a super clean balance sheet. I love that, super clean balance sheet. So we love the business. It's secular and cyclical. And it's very, very profitable from a cash flow perspective, from a return on equity perspective. Trailing 12 months, 39% return on equity. And over the past decade, it's averaged in the around in the high teens. So that's very strong. And they're buying back shares. We love, love that. 2015, they had 156 million shares outstanding. Now they only have 118. So not only they're expanding their stores, but they're buying back shares. Great combination, great business. Now, 2021 is well underway, and we're already into the month of May, and the summer is fast approaching. And in this market that we see a lot of changes, and I'm sure you do too, if you're holding too many tech stocks and growth stocks and that used to be exciting, not as exciting anymore. They're kind of languishing, but the exciting names are more in the hard assets, industrials, financials. That area is where we're seeing a lot of traction. So I think it's worth taking a minute to make you aware of some benefits of working with myself and Steve. Not only do we focus on those areas, we're very value investment focused, but we also practice parallel investing, which means we invest right alongside our clients. So I encourage you to take advantage of our free portfolio review assessment via telephone, Skype, or GoToMeetings. You can send us a message through investtalk.com or call our KPP financial offices in Irvine, California at 800-557-5461. We can talk. We'd love to help. No obligation. Just see how we can improve your situation. Next up, we'll play another voice bank question in 1 minute. Just hang on.
There is good news for loyal InvestTalk listeners, their friends, and families. Steve and Justin have recorded a special bonus podcast.
Been listening for a while and have got some great advice.
This free podcast is available for download anytime. Typically, each day and night, the InvestTalk call center receives more voicemail questions than Steve and Justin can fit into a live show format.
Hi, guys. Big fan of the show.
So in the bonus program, caller questions will be played back from our voice bank and answered with brief, unbiased, and helpful responses.
I think for like the next 10 years, commodities are going to be doing very well.
It's in the money. You probably just want to sell it.
It's a fast-paced learning podcast for the average investor.
Absolutely love your show.
It's free, so be sure to tell your friends. It can be downloaded now at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and investtalk.com. Look for Rapid Fire Hour.
Hey, Steve and Justin, this is Chris from Atlanta, Georgia. I want to say, first off, thank you for your show. We appreciate all the knowledge you give us. I have a small savings account for each of my three children. I have a six-year-old and two two-year-olds. And I thought about putting a small investment account for them to let, kind of help that money grow, since it's going to grow for 12, 18 plus years. Doing this for them, would you just buy indexes? Would you primarily look for growth since they're so young and have such a long horizon? Or would you continue with maybe value dividend investing for them? Just kind of wanted to know a way to organize it. It's something I want to do for them instead of just having a couple thousand dollars in a savings account and not really growing for them. I'd rather give them this and give them an opportunity to learn and see how money can grow. Appreciate y'all's help. Listen for the answer. Thank you.
Well, I definitely think over the next decade plus, you're going to get a much better outperformance of the value side of the market. We've had growth outperforming dramatically over the past, call it 14 years, since 2007. And now we've seen that shift. And so if you're going to use some sort of funds, that's the way I would be leaning. Now, as they get older, I would also start to maybe sprinkle in individual stocks in relation to the things that they like. I think that will be a good way for you to engage with them, for you to explain how equity investing works and the fact that they can own a product, they can use a product that they love, and they can also own a piece of the company that makes that product or service. Okay? And there's some connection there to really help them grasp how these things work. And maybe follow along with it. And so that's what I would do over the long term. Look for those opportunities as you see them grow and evolve and once again, use different products and services and bring them in front of the computer and say, look, you can make more money by investing in the business that makes this great product or service. So I hope that helped, and thanks for the call. Now let's see if we can fit in another caller question here. Let's go to Sid from Canada. He's looking at Microsoft.
Hey, Justin, good evening. Thank you for taking the call. Sure. I've been a long-timer listener to your show. Thank you for all the great work that you guys are doing. This is regarding the Microsoft. I'm holding good positions, but I still see that this is one of the great stock for a long, long term. And I need your inputs in terms of, is it still a good buying point or we should wait for some pullback? Appreciate your comment.
I would wait for a pullback here. This is one of those names that had great earnings. And a lot of these tech names had great earnings, fantastic blowout earnings. And they're down on the earnings report. That is not the best sign in the world. Let's just say that. Revenues are up 19% last quarter, earnings up 39%, and technically it's now rolled over. Now, it hasn't broken any major support. The major support would be about 235, now we're at 251 and change. But the valuation to me is not super stretched. I wouldn't say it's drastically overvalued, maybe a bit. But I would be more patient with Microsoft and the whole space. See how this kind of evolves. See how this turn evolves. And historically, when you see these great earnings reports with poor market reaction, that's not a good sign. So I would wait on Microsoft. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein, and we have one goal here each and every day. It's helped you achieve your own particular version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk. For serious investors, it's all about achieving financial freedom. That's why the unbiased guidance offered by Steve and Justin is so valuable. The Invest Talk Anytime listener lines are open now, and Steve and Justin welcome your questions. Call 888-99-CHART.
Hello, gentlemen. I'm calling to ask you about ticker symbol VALE. I looked it up online, and it seems like a good infrastructure play and a good commodities play. Just want to know if it passes your approval, and is that a good price right now to buy? Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
All right. Vale is the world's largest iron ore miner, and they are based out of Brazil. But a lot of their raw material comes from Australia. Sorry, that comes from Brazil. Excuse me. And they ship mostly to China. Okay. And they are very leveraged to the Chinese economy and infrastructure building. And that's, I think, the issue here is I don't think that China's going to be building as much as they in the next 10 years, as much as they have in the past 10 to 20 years to build out their manufacturing base, et cetera. Part of that is trade war. Part of that is policy to refocus their economy internally, et cetera. And they have higher costs than companies like Rio Tinto and BHP, which are in Australia. And that's why I don't love this. 85% of their forecasted EBITDA is coming from iron ore pellets. So that goes into building steel. And they do have some smaller exposure to nickel, which I like. But the fact that it's such a small percentage of their overall business makes it a very difficult. It's very difficult to convince me to like it because of the nickel, even though they have substantial nickel exposure, but it's just a small percentage compared to their iron ore. So overall, I like it. I just don't love it in this space. I rather own some of the other names in the space. But I like that you're looking at commodities, raw materials. Technically, it's fine, although today it was down 3 cents, even though commodity did well. So I would be a pause and wait on Vale, but I like that you're looking in this space. Thanks for the call. Now let's quickly follow up with earnings figures, and we are mostly about halfway through the earnings season, and as of Friday, results from 87% of those that have reported beat expectations. That's above the historical average of 65%, and that's not even the most impressive stat. The most impressive stat is that going back to 1994, companies that beat earnings by an average of 3.6% from earnings expectations. This earnings season, earnings are 22.8% above expectations on average. And that just shows you. A lot of people have been wondering, why is the market so strong? Well, there you have it. The market is looking forward. The market is always looking forward, always pricing in those expectations and the potential for beating those expectations. So the big question is the good news already priced in? And like I said, with Microsoft, even Apple, Amazon, a lot of these big names fell or are down over the past few days since their earnings reports. And that's a problem. But corporate earnings have historically been one of the biggest drivers of stock gains. And GDP growth is also a big driver of earnings. So if GDP is doing well, that typically translates into profits for corporations. And a big part of the calculation for GDP is, part of it is the spending on from government. The calculation for GDP is consumption plus investment plus government spending plus net exports. Obviously, net exports is always a drag. But when you have government spending so dramatically, you're going to get naturally GDP growth, which is going to feed into earnings growth. And that's what you're seeing. But there you go. That's why the market has been so strong. The big question is, how can companies build on the current earnings report? And they're always looking forward, and that's a big question mark that we'll have to answer. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another InvestTalk program. Steve Peasley and I thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads. You can get your free downloads anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And as always, investtalk.com. You can also browse by podcast topic, too. You can learn more about 401ks, cryptocurrency, treasury yields, real estate investing, growth stocks, etc. Just read the episode titles until you find a topic of interest. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president and Justin Klein, chief executive officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial.